When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the one thing all great teams have in common?
Great coaching.
Try to suck up to me, Evelyn.
I'm Gordon Bombay, the new hockey coach.
All right, let's go! Line B, come on!
We're Team USA, gathered from all across America. And we're going to stick together. You know why?
Because we are ducks, and ducks fly together.
It's the Quack Attack Podcast.
Hey, everybody. What a bunch of wusses. I'm Mike, that's Tommy.
Hello, everyone.
That's Kevin.
Hey, y'all.
Welcome to the Quack Attack Podcast, the definitive Mighty Ducks podcast. We are back at the Thanksgiving edition. This is exciting times here. So I, first of all, I'm very thankful for everybody who has become producers. We'll get to them at the end of the show, has donated money. Very helpful. We appreciate it. We got some stickers that are going out, and we have some stickers left. So there's still time to jump on the bandwagon. I will put both the monthly donation and the one-time donation link in the show notes. But thanks to everybody who has donated so far. We appreciate it. And then, Kevin may or may not need these donations just to live based on his Kin Token investment. So December 2016, Kevin invests, we'll call it, $300 in Kin Token, the cryptocurrency. It's gone down to a dollar something. It was at $10, and I think the last time we checked it was at $11. Kevin, do we have an update on your Kin Token investment?
Yeah, kind of a rough week. We're down 18% to $9.05.
Oh, jeez.
So trending the opposite direction after some solid rallying.
Yeah. Rough times there. But let's move on to something happier. And it is the return of the Mighty Ducks Minute. So we used to, go to Kevin's and record these in person, and we could watch the Mighty Ducks Minutes together. But that no longer is really been an option since, coronavirus and whatnot. So we tried the group watch feature, which I was interested to see if it would work. I think it has some potential to get some of the Quacklites in there, some of our producers in there to watch with us and things like that. So we did a virtual group watch Mighty Ducks Minute. It is minute 124. So that is minute number 19 to 20 in D2. We are in the midst of the beginning of training camp, I would say. The Ducks are scrimmaging the new players, and not too much audio here, but I think you can get the gist of it if you take a listen.
Thanks for breaking my phone.
Anytime.
Got it, man.
Come on, let's get out of there.
Haven't you guys been training in the off season?
You know, I knew we forgot something.
Good shot, Adam. Way to show.
Round one.
Just waiting to meet these kids. They're just fantastic.
Look out!
Look out, it's
falling!
Look out,
my son!
Like a bunch of misses.
All right. Just an initial impressions of this minute here, Tommy.
I think it's a good minute where you see the skills of the Ducks and kind of like the what's to come. So good foreshadowing with Luis crashing into Goldberg. You've got, the Cat making, really good save. and it ends with Fulton kind of clearing him out. One thing I'd forgotten is that, you know, Portman just fucking leveled everyone, including Fulton. You know, he tells him, like, oh, you know, something tough guy or whatever he says to him. And then, you know, Goldberg's little one-liner, you know, ding round one. And unfortunately, it ends too early for Tibbles to almost get killed on ice. But that's what comes. So it's a solid minute. Good music. I like it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. Kevin, just your initial thoughts here.
My first reaction was it's a very funny minute. It has a lot of like kind of classic moments, just with Averman and when Bombay asks him if they've been practicing. Some funny stuff from Goldberg as well. Just, you know, him kind of just being a, you know, clowning around. And the kind of moments of like Luis not being able to stop, stuff like that. I think it's a really good minute, and it's a really funny, not necessarily iconic, but it kind of captures a lot of the spirit in the quick little minute.
Yeah, encapsulates a lot. I feel like we've gotten quite a few of these where we look at these minutes, and it really shows the breadth of the Mighty Ducks here. I do want to go back to Portman because Tommy makes a good point. He is just dominant in this minute. He takes out, I think, three separate players in 1 minute. So, you know, based on who's on the ice, you're looking at 60% of the other team's players. But as we, like, go on, do we feel like he is that good later on? Or was this just the Mighty Ducks being bad or him showing off? How do we rectify how good he was in this minute versus I feel like he might take a step back, you know, once we get to the actual games and he's not quite as dominant?
Well, it's kind of the, you know, like, there's always like one kid that's really good in like middle school and just like is just better than everybody. And I think that's kind of on display here. He's so much bigger than everybody that he's just able to physically dominate them. And then obviously that changes once the competition levels up and like the literal size of opponents changes. So I think that's what's on display. Like if you look at it, like the Ducks are very, very small.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Because they don't have this. That's why Portman's there, to like add some size to them. They don't necessarily, or at least Tibbles doesn't necessarily look at him as like a skill player. So
I that feel is like, a good... sorry to kind of segue off that. I feel like Banks is the only Duck who would have tried to stay in shape in the offseason. Maybe Connie, but like through rollerblading or whatever. And I guess Guy, because he would also be doing whatever activity she's doing. But I feel like that's probably shown here is the Ducks are out of shape. And so they will get in better shape during camp. And then I think Kevin's right is that once they play, you know, Iceland or whatever, they're much bigger. And so Portman's not able to dominate as much. But you do kind of think, wow, he took a step back after like destroying. It's almost like when you have a running back who just like does super, super well, like the first two non-con games of the year, because you're playing against cupcakes. And then as soon as you play your first conference game, he's held to like 2 yards a carry.
I remember playing middle school football. There was this each year in our league, fifth grade through seventh grade, I think, if you were over a certain weight, you had to wear an X on your helmet and that meant you weren't allowed to carry the ball. Like even if you picked up a fumble, they would blow it dead because it's just like literally a safety issue for like these kids that would just roll over kids. But then that goes away in eighth grade. And I remember we played this team that they had this like 250-pound running back. And it's like, come on, like I can't tackle this guy. Like he just like ran through everybody. So that just made me think of that.
Wow. You always see videos of like especially like rugby kids. Like, and there's like one who's not necessarily like hit puberty first, but he's just bigger than everyone. And those are always hilarious to watch where he's just like, he could probably kill some of those kids just running through them. And especially if you have like a bunch of 10-year-olds and one of them just like, hey, tough shit. But at the same time, it's like, you know, that 250-pound running back is definitely going to have to be a lineman in high school. Yeah. Like, there's no way he's going to keep that up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'll put some of those, or at least one of those videos in the show notes, because it is funny to watch little kids get trucked. I would say a bit of a safety issue for Portman to be like taking on Averman, or I don't know who else is tiny on this team. I guess Averman is really the smallest that I can think of. But
Goldberg's not very tall, but I guess he's because he's heavier.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I think I do like the analogy of like Portman needing to wear an X on his helmet or something during practice. But if we go, I mean, what did we just make? I mean, I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts on the hockey scenes. Obviously, this is pretty much all hockey scenes. What did you guys think of them? Did you think they were noticeably good, noticeably bad, in any way?
So there were three frames that stood out to me for the hockey. The one is when Portman, I think, just levels Banks in the open ice. Mm-hmm. Essentially, he like ducks down, and so Banks like just flips over him. I'm like, that like doesn't seem real. The next one is when there's like four Ducks like trying to get the puck right in the corner, and then Bombay is like, "Did you guys train or anything?" I'm like, "Why did you have so many Ducks trying to get the puck at this point? Like, where was your outlet pass?" And then the last one is, I think Jesse had a slap shot saved by Julie the Cat, and he looked like super bummed that it wasn't a goal. It's like, that didn't seem that like it was kind of a high shot, like right at the glove. Like, why would you expect that to go in?
Yeah. Yeah. Good points. The Portman hit would probably be a penalty. He went so low on that and like flipped Banks over, but I enjoyed that.
Also, he's doing that on like your star player.
Like, yeah. It's like, you need to get Banks a red jersey right away. It's like, do not touch him.
Do they do that in hockey? Like, do they give like players like kind of like, don't touch this guy, like in practice? Like,
I mean, it's sort of like, it's, I mean, if you're injured or something like that, yes, but it's sort of like understood that, I mean, unless you're doing like a preseason scrimmage where the coach says this is like all out, like you can hit guys in practice, but you're not going out trying to level people. You're it's sort of understood, like protect your own players. Like, yeah, you might have a chance to really like blindside somebody or something like that, and you might just give them a little shove. Like, you could have made it way worse. So yeah, I think all good points there.
One quick question on Banks' shot. Mm-hmm. Does he score there? It's hard to tell, or does Joy the Cat stop it? Because I don't think you can see the puck.
Yeah, I was always under the assumption that he scored, but yeah. I
assume based on Bombay's reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Bombay, another issue we'll get to in a second. But yeah, good eye there, Tommy. Yeah. To have so many players at the bench, like fighting for a puck, and no one come out with it, like the other team comes out with it. Embarrassing. And then the Julie the Cat save to me was like the worst hockey scene or showcased. Like, she, you could tell she's like barely, she can barely stand, and she just like reaches her glove out and like it just goes in there. So yeah, I don't know if Julie the Cat was like just baiting the Ducks or she was just bad at that point. But yeah, I mean, Kevin, did you notice anything in the hockey scenes there?
No, I thought it was, of all the hockey in the films, I thought it was probably some of the best, like just from like, it kind of seemed fluid, you know, it wasn't very choppy. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was pretty good. But
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the one thing that I noticed is like, it did seem a lot more natural than oftentimes we see.
Yeah. There was a good pace there for sure. Mm-hmm. There was a good pace there for sure. What did we think of Bombay and his coaching / encouragement? I guess I have some thoughts, but I'll let you guys weigh in before I get into it.
My first thought is, so this is the first time he's seen the new guys or whatever. That's fine. But this is the first time you've seen the Ducks. Did you not do like anything? And she just threw him on the ice to be like, hey, once you scrimmage, you can't just like, he has no training plan, I guess. I don't know.
I thought it was maybe like kind of a bit of foreshadowing and how cocky he was. He just kind of threw him out there and kind of figured they'd hold their own at the very least. But I think that kind of foreshadows like how cocky he gets later in the movie as well. It's, you kind of start to see that
Also so. Blaming them. It's like, haven't you guys been practicing the offseason? Yeah. It's like, they're 11 and 12 or whatever. It's like, what yeah. the fuck do you think they're doing in the offseason?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're... Also,
and I don't really know what the timeline between like when he like rounded them up and when this is, but like, it doesn't seem like there was a whole lot of advance notice that they were going to be in the Goodwill Games.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, it's, I think it's pretty expected that they would be rusty at best.
Yeah, and like it's not like they're the Hawks too, and they like know how to win, and they have an off-season training program. You would figure Bombay would at least tell them to do something, or maybe hold a informal practice or something before then. During the scrimmage, he just yells like, "Good shot, Adam!" Like he doesn't provide any sort of coaching. He just sort of stands there and either gets mad at them or yells at them. So. My question was, do we think this is like intentional where he just wanted to watch first and see what happened, but we're saying he just wasn't prepared.
I guess it is like a, let me see, cause he wants to see these new guys, like, let's see what they can do. And so this may be like just a fun way to like, to look at him instead of be like, all right, we're going to like, you know, do lines or whatever, or we're just going to do like 3-on-2 drills. Mm-hmm. And so I guess this is a good way, and it's fun. And I figure all the new kids have something to prove to him. But I think I'm more upset that he doesn't have any like kind of communication with the Ducks, but I guess maybe he's holding it all in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he just wanted to throw them out there and get a sense of where they're at. But I do think there was an element of cockiness to it.
Yeah, I mean, you make good points about, like, before then he should have had some sort of contact or preparation. Like, you're playing in an international tournament. You should, you know, have some contact with your players before the very beginning of some sort of week or two-week training camp, and then you go and play. So anything else you guys saw that we need to touch on here? Any little moments that stuck out?
So I've got one, and I don't know if I'm just reading into this a little bit or so. At the very end, when Fulton winds up his slap shot, he's like, "Everyone get out of here, blah, blah, blah." It's Fulton, and Portman goes, "What a bunch of wusses." Mm-hmm. It kind of looks like that "what a bunch of wusses" is dubbed over.
Oh.
And I wonder if he said "what a bunch of pussies."
Oh.
And
sounds like a question for Brill.
Yeah, well, Brill wasn't involved with this one, right?
No, that's a good point.
He was. The third one he wasn't really involved with, but this one he was.
There was one other moment where when Averman and Bombay talk, and he's like, "You know, I knew we forgot something." That definitely sounded like it was recorded post, just like the cadence of the voice, whatever. And so I do really wonder if Portman's wusses line was originally he said pussies, which – you can understand why they would not want that in the movie.
Yeah, and it makes sense. Like, maybe they're like, oh, that's going to push it up to, like, a PG-13. So they had to go back and, like, dub it over to say wusses. Yeah, I'm going to have to investigate that further and really break it down.
I have a question on Fulton's shot.
Sure.
Is this the worst Fulton shot ever? Like, the most, like, off shot that he's ever taken?
Well, he hits, obviously we don't really make it in this minute, but he hits like the crossbar and then it like bounces around.
Oh, that's right. It does hit the crossbar. I forget about that.
Yeah. So most unlucky, I would definitely say. Maybe the most unlucky shot in the world.
And also physically, that had to have had so much speed on it. Like,
yeah.
That was like the Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, McDonald's commercials from back in the, or maybe it was a Magic Johnson. No, I think it was Jordan, where they're playing horse and they're like bouncing it all over the place.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like if he took that shot and it bounced off all those things and it still came and knocked out Tibbles.
It also comes at like a 90 degree angle, like right at him, like which would be physically impossible at that point.
Yeah, but yeah, he based on like all the energy it would lose off of bouncing things, like it had to be like an 800 mile an hour shot. So
what's the fastest slap shot ever recorded?
Ooh, I think it's like 116, 118. I can look it up. We'll get to it by the end of this episode. But Yeah, Zdeno Chara used to be the record holder. I don't know if he still is. I haven't watched the.
How fast were your slap shots, Mike?
Oh my!
This is what the people want to know.
Not close. I like maybe in the 70s, 80s. Like maybe I don't know.
I feel like you're inflating yourself there, but okay.
I might be. I honestly have no idea. Like we don't. I guess we've done it a couple times, but I don't remember what the numbers were. But, I mean, it was nowhere close to, you know, NHLers are putting it in the high 90s with regularity. If they can, you know, do it like the skills competition where you can skate in and wind up, like, you're ripping that shot. But, yeah, I mean, they're way up there. I probably, if I had to guess, my highest would be somewhere in the mid-70s. Like 73, 74. So, but yeah, maybe I'll. Well, I guess we have Corona and everyone's stuck at home. But I was gonna say maybe we'll go. There's got to be a place that can measure it for us, or we just get a radar gun and do it ourselves.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
Yeah. So yeah, we'll just have to buy a radar gun. But anything else here before we move on to the MVPs?
I don't think anything from me.
All right. So who would you say is the MVP of this minute?
I mean, just based on pure impact, it almost has to be Portman. I do think Julie the Cat, though, showing off her skills in a very quiet manner, mm-hmm. I think deserves consideration. But I think based on sheer impact, goes to Portman. For comedy, probably Goldberg.
Yeah, I was going to say Goldberg gets an honorable mention for his cheek. I think Portman has to get the nod for most valuable player of this minute. I also think Mendoza just gives a solid performance. Like he's got, you know, two frames in this scene and he does them both very fine. It's a solid effort, so good for him. I don't think we give him enough credit sometimes, but he was good in this scene. But I agree, Portman, MVP, and it was, you know, definitely framed for him to be the MVP. But Goldberg, I think, gets the honorable mention, the golden, you know, comedy award for this one.
Yeah, yeah. Good point on Luis. Like, he didn't have a lot of time, but, you know, he doesn't stop. He crashes into Bulber. Oh, thanks for breaking my fall. And Goldberg has a couple nice lines, but yeah. Portman decks three players, says what a bunch of wusses, has a weird laugh where it's like, huh, after he hits the two other ducks there. So just a unanimous call for Portman. So congratulations to Dean Portman. I don't know if he's ever had an MVP before. I do not want to go back and look at all our minutes to figure out our MVPs. Maybe I'll do that one day. But today is not the day. So let's take a short break here, and then we'll come back with the quack question.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We are back. You ask us questions on Facebook, on Twitter, through email. We pick the best ones. Try to answer them. Kevin, what is the quack question today?
So today's quack question comes from Michael. I don't know if, should I say his last name? I don't really know how this works with these email questions.
We'll just say Michael F, but not
Michael F. Michael Mike, F. Or Mike F.
Aren't you, yeah. Mike F? Mike?
I am, but I did not send in this question.
Okay. No, he did
Mike
not.
Mike F. R.
So Mike's question is, like most red-blooded, okay, and just settle in, folks. This is a pretty long question. Mike's question is, like most red-blooded American men on fall Saturdays, I was watching football tonight. However, my beloved Kentucky Wildcats forgot what day it was and never got off the bus. With our 63-3 beat down by Alabama, I had time to ponder many of the great questions of the universe. But I settled for trying to figure out how Duluth East defeated the Hawks in 1973 and I think I have it figured out. It involves cheating and the fall of the Soviet Union. This is already a great start for this. Duluth East was tired of losing every year to the Hawks, so they brought in older kids, but not just any older kids. Pee Wee hockey is up to the 12 and under age, and according to the Minnesota Youth Hockey website, some kids will turn 13 in that season. Duluth, Minnesota is in St. Louis County, Minnesota. Three players on the 1980 Miracle on Ice gold medal winning team were from various parts of St. Louis County. John Harrington, Virginia, Minnesota, age 22, Mark Pavlovich, Eveleth, Minnesota, age 21, and Phil Fergoda, Duluth, Minnesota, age 22, were at least three of the guys brought in to stop the Hawks in Bombay. They each would have been 14 or 15 in 1973. Fergoda even played hockey at Duluth East High School. So it's 1973. All the coach needed were local kids who are destined for greatness and some phony birth certificates. Had to be easier to forge than today. So he calls around St. Louis County and recruits the best kids who just graduated from Pee Wee. Then he passed off these 14 or 15-year-olds as 12 or 13, which isn't completely unfathomable, and he now has a shot against the Hawks. So in sum, it took three guys who helped to bring down the Iron Curtain cheating to beat one little Gordon Bombay. These three guys weren't scrubs either. Pavlovich holds the New York Rangers record for points for a rookie. Pavlovich and Harrington were given assists on the famous game-winning goal from Michael Ruzioni. So with that, can we call this case solved? He got in a question there at the end, so I guess that technically qualifies.
Yeah.
But wow, that's a lot of thought and effort went into that. So just bravo from the get-go.
Yeah, I appreciated the research and the timing and everything here. I think this really hinges on the faking of the birth certificates. And I guess my biggest question would be, wouldn't these kids be recognizable? If they were that good, wouldn't they be recognizable and be like, hey, didn't that kid play in the Pee Wees last year and now he's back in the Pee Wees?
I mean, maybe they like wear their helmets always and never take them off.
Mm. Well, back then, did they
even have the shields?
Face shields.
Yeah.
So I really like the theory. I do feel like Riley would be all over that. Mm. He's family friends with Duxworth. He knows lawyers. And, you know, you got to feel like he would have been, especially in his younger days, would have called that out very quickly. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I wonder if the Hawks have also kind of had some kind of, have always kind of cheated with boundaries as they did with Banks. Mm-hmm. And so if they were to call out, you know, Dolethese cheating, they would have then turned around and had to be called out themselves. So it's almost like, shit, they got us at our own game and we had to deal with it. So maybe that's what happened.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's good.
I like
that. They kind of caught with their pants down there.
Yeah. Yeah. So Riley probably knows this. And like, if you look at that Duluth East goalie, he looks like he's about 6'4", that Gordon goes against. Like his head is well above the crossbar. So it would make sense that they had older kids and you would need sort of a golden generation. Although this is the beginning of the Hawks dynasty. So yeah, you would expect Riley was, he hadn't had like the feeder system really going. So he would need to stretch the rules a little bit to get things going. And then, yeah, he probably knew, but as Tommy said, you can't turn him in. Like, what are you going to do? Turn in the other team for cheating when you're doing it yourself?
And it's there's a great line if you've ever seen Pony Access, the ESPN 30 for 30 on SMU. There's a real documentary, actually. Dale Hansen, who's a longtime reporter in the Dallas area, was talking about Eric Dickerson and how there are always allegations that he was going to A&M because they like bought him a car. And then he flipped to SMU. And then it's like, well, what are you, A&M? What can you do? You can't be like, hey, we bribed that kid and he didn't honor the bribe. It's like, No, you just got to cut your losses. So this is the same thing. It's like, you can't, hey, you tried to cheat and it didn't work out and you can't really call him out because you're cheating too or whatever.
Yeah, it's the same thing as like steroids in baseball where it was like, you know, if you call out a guy for cheating, it's like, yeah, but 90% of your team is too. And then on a grander scale, like, just like the mutually assured destruction of nuclear bombs, like everybody has them. They don't use them because they will destroy the world, you know? So it's kind of like that same concept of mutually assured destruction.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground here.
Going on a much bigger scale with Pee Wee Hockey.
Yes.
Covered a lot of ground. I don't know how we ended up in nuclear, Holocaust, but
we're talking about Soviet Union. I mean, it's got to be mentioned.
Yeah. But yeah, I think this does make sense the more I think about it. Because even if the other teams knew, they probably didn't like the Hawks either. They probably knew the Hawks were stretching the rules, and it was just sort of a culture of silence here. Maybe this whole thing probably brings everybody in the league into play about, you know, recruiting older kids and stuff like that, and then not saying things about it. So
I wonder if after this they all kind of had to be like, all right, we're going to cut that shit, no more cheating. And then the Hawks just are still able to kind of bend the rules. But I imagine there's maybe some kind of like reset button after this game, but the Hawks still are able to take advantage just because they do have like the pedigree.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely like not necessarily a scandal, but there's some rule changes that like makes sense when you start thinking about it. And you have to reset. But Riley sort of already has his system going, and then he rips off all the state championships. So good question there, Michael. I think we answered it. So the answer is yes. Like, these three kids are older, and that's what it took to take down this early Hawks dynasty here.
Do you think the highlight of their career was that, or winning gold at the Olympics?
I think at the time they would say, you know, gold, but then once they realized that Bombay became coach of the Junior Goodwill Games, they're like, oh, we beat him in Pee Wees.
Do you think that Herb Powell, the coach of Team USA, or Herb Brooks, not Herb Powell, Herb Brooks, that he saw these guys and said, wow, they beat the Hawks? You're definitely on Team USA. Mm-hmm.
Herb was a Minnesota guy. Like, he probably knew. Yeah, he's probably had his eyes on these kids for a while there. So it's all making sense. Wow. We might have to revisit this. And then really, I need like a cork board like the detectives have, with like pictures and string and stuff like that, to really figure this one out. But that's probably for another time. For us, thequarktech.com. Go there, contact us at quarktechpod on Twitter, facebook.com/quarktechpod. Go to iTunes, give us 5 stars, tell us what you think about this huge peewee scandal here. Go to the shop, get your gear, Black Friday deal, all t-shirts $12.50, and everything else is 20% off, so that's about as good as it's gonna get for you there. Thanks to our executive producers, Elsie and Alex. Duck call to you guys. And thanks to our other producers, Deborah, Jeremiah, Adam, Joyce, Jared, and Lisa. If you want to be a producer, the link is in the show notes. You can donate there, monthly donation or one-time donation, whatever floats your boat. You know, I understand you don't want to have that monthly occurrence, but it does help when you're monthly. So we appreciate it, whatever you give us. And remember, ducks fly together.
Ducks fly together.
Quack, quack. Ain't no turning back. Got to be
the man in the heart of quack attack. The quack attack is back, Jack. Oh, yeah.